I've got Tina with me. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Mike.
How are you doing?
I'm very well, thank you.
You just told me you come back from Italy and fortunately were able to evade all those terrible earthquakes a few weeks ago there.
Yes, I arrived the day after in just the northern area.
Gosh, yeah. I bet it was a very scary time though, was it?
It was, because there are lots of aftershakes. So,
and you felt them? Did
yes,
you feel? Oh,
indeed,
my goodness
yeah.
me.
Mm. No, it's terrible.
Have you ever been in an earthquake area?
No, I'm lucky to say no to that. No, I'm sure it's absolutely terrifying.
Heavens above.
Yes.
Well, touch wood, will not happen again anyway. So Tina, of course, is the managing director of the Cambridge Cookery School, comes in every month to see us, and also writes an article every month for Cambridge News. And it's that article that I guess we're going to sort of chat about, really. The idea of being a good cook, which sounds a bit of a ridiculous statement, really, but most people, I guess, can boil an egg or possibly make spag bol. out of a tin, perhaps. But that's not what you mean, is it, really?
No, it's not. I wrote the article, really, on the line of Cambridge being a city, you know, where the thing that really matters is academic excellence, and that is really what we're all about here, it seems, a lot of the time, which is certainly something to be proud of. But I think that it makes for a very, very sad and also potentially unhealthy and ultimately dangerous life if you do not know how to cook for yourself.
I always think schools, you know, do a great job at school and so forth, getting you through all the various exams to learn to write and read and all the rest of it. But some of the life skills that you need, such as cooking and I guess budgeting and stuff like that, they always seem to be a bit lacking. And I know my children, when they came out of school, didn't have really much sort of knowledge about that until I guess they'd gone off to university and had to cook for themselves, really.
Mm, that is usually the time that, you know, young people actually realise, when it dawns on them that
Mum's not there anymore.
Yeah, yes, indeed. Yes, I think it's, increasingly our quality of life and our life expectancy, actually, and the, if we are to say, the haves and have-nots, is increasingly defined by health issues, and those health issues always relate back to what we eat.
So is it a skill or is it more about education, do you think, Tina? Is it the, you know, that you need to know what the right things are to eat, or is it actually a combination of knowing that and then being able to produce it?
Well, I guess it's a bit of both, isn't it? As with any skill, you need to be shown how to do it if you haven't. And I think that's what's changed very rapidly, that in just perhaps one generation of working parents for whom it was a liberation to be able to just turn to ready meals and food as being home cooked or food being made in the home every day has taken a really... It's fallen very low down on the priority lists in people's lives, and people always, always claim to have too little time to cook, which is frankly just a ridiculous statement to make if you look into what you are doing instead and how trivial and utterly useless a lot of those things are that you want to fit in instead. And how sad it is that we have a generation of youngsters who haven't seen any real food preparation at home, or very, very, very little. And therefore, as you say, when they leave home and go to university, it dawns on them, and possibly their parents too, that they really are utterly helpless when it comes to preparing food for themselves.
Do you think it's a bit daunting, though, if you haven't been taught how to cook, if you haven't perhaps stood with your mum in the kitchen, to make a sexist remark, perhaps, and watched what she does? Do you think it's a bit daunting to kind of know where to start? I mean, as I say, everybody no doubt can stick an egg in a pan to boil an egg or whatever, but, you know, sitting or standing in the kitchen with a whole load of ingredients and thinking, right, okay, I've got a recipe here and I've got a whole load of ingredients and let's go. Is that a bit daunting, perhaps?
I think it possibly is if you haven't done any of it and you haven't seen it being done, which is really quite strange, isn't it? Because we are not talking about an obscure, peculiar skill here that perhaps only the few would have had a chance to watch. This was something that was just taken for granted very, very recently, that you would be able to cook for yourself. And whilst it's easy to see historically in recent history why it was liberating, not least for women when they went back out to work, to be able to spend less time preparing food. It seemed like it was the solution for everything, and it liberated people. And if you look at the developing world, where there are still countries where just fetching, gathering and preparing food from a very basic level takes up so much time that it becomes quite impossible to do other things. of course, it can seem like an excellent idea that you can just go to the supermarket and pick a box of something. But as we now know, given the debate that is constantly on the forefront, is not doing our health any good at all. And the rise of obesity and of type 2 diabetes and other illnesses that are absolutely, uniquely, directly and exclusively related to the wrong diet. This is becoming a real big issue. But I think in my article, I was also making the point, it isn't just the sort of cold facts, if you like. I think it's...
there's a lot of soft skills that you get from the
Creeley,
aren't there?
Yeah, not just the skills, but I think actually for me, quality of life, I think it's a very, very sad and poor existence when you just eat things that mean no more to you than the toothpaste you buy.
I was reading your article and I was just thinking about some of the things that you said. One of the points I think you made in the article was about social interaction and, you know, standing in the kitchen, as I was saying there, with your maybe your mum or your dad and talking to them, which sadly these days seems to be something that happens all too little. Everybody's on their phones all the time, aren't they? So, you know, getting quality time, as they call it, with family members, maybe cooking helps with that.
I think it should be established whilst children are as young as possible, but I think it's particularly poignant when children go into their young teens, when they do seem to become much more isolated, as you say, mainly because of their phones and other devices and going on social media and, you know, coming in after a long school day and possibly clubs and just literally saying hi to a mum or dad if they're there, and then disappearing upstairs or to their room or wherever they hang out. And
I know that feeling. My kids did it. Yeah, we thought, have we got children or not? You know.
Yes. And you end up texting them to see if they're in the house. But I think it's a very good, easy way to interact for 15 minutes or so, and just chatting whilst you're busy doing something practical. So it's not stilted, it's very natural. You're chatting while you're doing something together, it doesn't take a lot of time. And you then sit down, I think, with a very different outlook on the food in front of you when you prepared it yourself. It means absolutely nothing when it comes out of a pack, but it means a lot when it's been prepared with your own two or four or six hands, however many of you there were helping.
I remember one of the issues that we had with our family, with our children and so on, they didn't get involved in helping to prepare the food, and they'd come and sit at the table and then criticise everything that was put in front of them. It's, oh, it's not very nice, or I don't like that, it's not been cooked very well, or whatever. But I think the point you're making there, if they actually were involved with the whole thing, they'd not only perhaps take a different view on that, but they'd also appreciate the amount of effort that actually went into to preparing it, really.
Yes, and I think, you know, a lot of parents express a concern to us at the cookery school about having fussy eaters, or they will say, oh, one child is very good, but my other, you know, is a very fussy eater. And I think you can't really be a fussy eater if the sort of the option isn't there to say those things, or to say, I just want a pizza. If it is something that just happens, this is what we cook, and then now this is what we eat, you will not have a fussy eater. Very few people are born with a dislike for most things. I think we're all born with perhaps a preference towards the sweet or the bitter or whatever. You know, some of us have very sensitive palates. Others, I know, like me, we fall into a category that is defined as less sensitive palates, and I fall into all of those classics. I love black coffee, I like tannic wines, I like umami flavours, so miso soup, but I can easily leave a piece of chocolate or cake alone. So of course there are some, I think, genetically predispositioned likes and dislikes, but not in that sense that I hear people saying that they don't need a whole category of this or that. But that is because I think they haven't been tempted and they haven't been involved. And the difference in what youngsters will eat, if it's just put in front of them, like you described, made by mum and dad, compared to if they had been involved, I'm pretty sure they would actually have eaten it if they had been involved in preparing it.
I think the analogy I would make is you can go on the internet and find software to download for your computer or an app for your phone or whatever. If it's free... generally speaking, strangely, it's not valued as much as something that you would go out and pay for. And I think food's a bit like that as well, that if you were involved in making it yourself, you would perhaps value it more than just having something put in front of you that just, you know, it's a meal and whatever. Okay, so standing next to your mum, learning what she does and so on, that's one way. Are there other ways, or better ways perhaps, to learn the skills of cooking? And so we're not just talking about boiling an egg here, talking about being really quite a competent cook.
Yeah, competent, not because I think that everybody should spend their lives preparing complex meals every day. That's completely unrealistic and also very unnecessary. I think it's nice to make something special every now and then. I'm talking about being able to prepare 10-minute meals every day, just making it from scratch, because, as I say, the health issues are so really devastating when you don't, and you start to only feed your body foods that are full of things that are very bad for us: fat, salt, sugar, preservatives, all sorts of chemicals, and all the issues. You know, at the moment, media is running very much with the sugar issue, and rightly so. And we've been going on about that for the past 10 years at the cookery school, about sugar being the culprit rather than fat. But it's bad to isolate and you know, put into isolation just single ingredients, because it doesn't work like that. And if you cook at home, it is actually impossible to overdose on anything like salt and sugar, because if you did, if you had so much of it in your home-cooked meals that you reach the danger levels that you get automatically when you're buying anything ready-made, you wouldn't be able to eat it. It would be inedible. You wouldn't put 16 teaspoons of sugar in your tomato sauce,
sure, yeah,
as most of the well-known brands of what seems like a very healthy, clean tomato sauce that comes in a glass jar.
Yeah, I know,
I'm not going to mention any brands.
Crazy.
Has up to 16 teaspoons of sugar. So, you know, you wouldn't get those issues. And I think we are strangely happy to put our lives in the hands of big food brands. And we need to remember that they do not wish us well in the true sense of the word. They are just looking for profit. They're not looking to make us healthy or well-functioning people. That is not their aim. And to cook yourself means to regain control.
Okay, so if you want to take control, to use a phrase that's been used quite a lot recently, what's the starting point? Do you, you say about, producing a meal that only takes 10 minutes to produce. So is that by definition a simple meal, or can it be a complex meal even prepared quite quickly?
I don't know how we should define complex or simple. I would just say a good and a healthy, delicious and enjoyable meal does not take more than 10 minutes to make. If you're using fresh ingredients, you can very quickly make an absolutely delicious and very healthy meal, whether it's a pasta dish or a soup or a big salad. If you cook fish, it's very, very, very quick. There are so many ingredients that people perhaps think of as difficult to prepare, and they're far from it. It's simply because we've lost touch. And as you say, this willingness to be told what is healthy for us, or, you know, free from this, added this and that. We are just being taken for a complete ride.
Mm. So if you start and you're starting on something relatively straightforward and simple, how can you assess how you're getting on, if you're sort of doing it well and then can progress on to the next level? Are there any ways or any means by which you can say, okay, so I think I've mastered, I mean, is it simply a case of saying to somebody, what do you think? Do you think that's a good meal, or are there other ways?
I think if we go back to a scenario where food is prepared on a daily basis at home, you would almost absorb it by osmosis, I would say. You would have some clue of what's going on, if nothing else, because you pass through the kitchen. I think if you ask a child who's grown up in a cooking house and they have never helped by the age they're 8 or 10 how to make something, they would probably say, well, I think we start with some onions and some tomatoes and blah, blah, blah. They will have some idea, because obviously they have seen it being done. It's just something that goes on around you as a daily activity, and I think that's how it should be. And then I think it's very, very important to interact around the table as well and not let families eat at individual times and just ping something in the microwave. I think we're really losing something very important.
Yes, because that's kind of a family moment, isn't it, really? Getting everybody together and find out what's been going on during the day as well. So I guess to finish, just the age-old question, as far as cooking goes, are females better at it than males?
No, of course not.
No?
At all.
They haven't got an inbuilt sort of knack to make meals better than blokes?
No.
No?
Absolutely not. We come across as many excellent...
I was hoping you would say the opposite of
no,
that.
No, I think there are, you know, that is just a reflection, sadly, of how society used to look, and that is not how it looks anymore. And I think it's ideally You know, your sex shouldn't define whether you're the cook in the family or not.
No, and the truth is, of course, lots of people live on their own these days, so men, just as much as women, do have to have those skills. It's not just a case of going out and buying a pizza or a ready meal, as you were saying before, they're from the supermarket, really. Tina, thanks ever so much for coming in. I really appreciate it, and we look forward to seeing you next month, but I think we're going to see you a week later, because you're off on your travels again, aren't you?
I'm off learning how to make gelato.
Oh, dear. Oh, well, I'll ask you a question, right? Because it was just in the Guinness Book of Records has just been published today. And one of the points that was in the Guinness Book of Records as to one of the records that they've just published for the first time is how many scoops of ice cream do you think is the record? How many scoops on top of each other?
Do you mean actually physically being able to scoop it in a cone?
Having a cone in your hand, yes. And then putting scoops on top of each other. How many do you think they could...
And this doesn't involve super glue, I take it?
No. This is ice cream, real ice cream, yes. On a cool day, so it's not melting, okay?
On a cool day.
How many do you think is the world record that's published in the Guinness Book of Records?
Well, I look back on the number of times that a scoop has come off an ice cream with three scoops on, I'd be very cautious. So I would probably guess something below 10, but I'm sure I'm wrong.
Would you believe 121?
No.
By an Italian as well, I might tell you.
Well, it would be, I guess, yes.
Tina, thanks ever so much for coming in.